And welcome to part two of Connecting the Dots on Digital Health Series, Technology, Data, and IT Strategies webinar, presented by Polsinelli. Today's webinar is being recorded and will be available for replay within 24 hours on our website. Please use the Q&A box to submit questions to our speakers throughout the webinar. If you experience any technical difficulties, please type your question in the Q&A box and our engineer will assist you. To access the materials from today's webinar, please reference the Resources tab located next to the speaker bio. I would now like to turn the webinar over to Polsinelli shareholder Jean Marie Pochette.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining our part two of our four-part webinar series. As Ashley said, my name is Jean Pochette. I'm a shareholder of Polsinelli, and my practice bridges a number of areas, including technology, transaction and data privacy, IP and licensing, and healthcare. So this four-part series seeks to connect the dots on digital health by providing some practical perspective on the interplay of key business and legal issues surrounding the digital health space. So as we look at this, what we call our flower diagram, or as some of us look at it, I see it as a Venn diagram, it shows the overlapping circles converging on digital health. So we had last, in September, our first webinar was on the overview of business model and healthcare regulatory considerations, and today we're going to talk about securing and protecting IP ideas and technology. The title of this of our presentation is Technology, Data, and IP Strategies from an Industry Perspective, and we are very excited to have the members comprised of both my colleagues, shareholders in the patent and IP practice areas, as well as members from industry. So we have Eric Hansen and Karen Elliott, and we will also have industry leaders from Sanuwave and Merge. But Eric, I turn to you to briefly introduce yourself.
Thanks, Jean. My name is Eric Hansen. I'm an intellectual property attorney in Polsinelli's Atlanta office. I've been a registered patent attorney for over 20 years. I recently co-authored the U.S. intellectual property chapter in the 2020 International Comparative Legal Guide for Digital Health. My practice involves assisting companies with building, managing, and commercializing their global IP portfolios, and I've had the pleasure of working with our panel guest, Sanuwave, on IP matters for the past 15 years. Taryn, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Eric. I'm a shareholder in the Denver office, and I lead Polsinelli's product design and user interface practice. That practice specializes in comprehensive IP portfolios that include complementary utility and design patent protection, as well as trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. I've had the pleasure of working with one of our other panel members, Merge, for the last several years. And I'll let them introduce themselves.
So we have Todd Bucca of Merge. Todd?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. Again, Todd Bucca, CEO and founder of Merge. Quick background from me is first part of my career, I worked at Apple as an engineering manager for the design and development of new products, specifically the iBooks, and then got into the medical device field and founded Merge to hopefully improve how patients and clinics are managed with implantable cardiac devices.
And we also have members of Sanuwave Health, Kevin Richardson. Kevin?
Great. Hi, I'm Kevin Richardson. I'm the CEO and chairman of Sanuwave Health. And we're a wound care company using innovative products to help heal wounds, all types of wounds from diabetic foot ulcers to pressure ulcers, to anything that's a wound, we address it. That's our commercial aspect. And then we have a number of emerging fields that I'm sure we'll talk about as we go through our presentation. And we also have our Chief Science and Technology Officer on the call as well, who can go next.
Hello, everyone. This is Yulian Chuanta. I'm the Chief Science and Technology Officer for Sanyaase Health, Inc. I was trained in technology systems and biomedical engineering, had the opportunity to work in both academia and medical device industry. I designed different medical devices as bioreactors, micromanipulators, urologic and cardiovascular catheter-based systems, cardio and endovascular stents, drug-eluting stents, abdominal aortic aneurysm system, and so on. I have a PhD from Duke on the use and outcomes in tissue interaction of shockwaves for lithotripsy, which is the first application of shockwaves in a medical field for kidney stone breakage. That is what brought me to Sanyaase in 2007 for totally different applications, this time for hard and soft tissue regeneration, biofilm destruction, to name a few. Work for a few small startups, also for medium-sized and large-sized companies with locations all around the world. Thank you.
Thank you. I went back to that earlier slide because we have a lot of ground to cover today, and I wanted to give you a roadmap to our webinar. And so we are going to provide a brief overview on the categories of digital health IP. We'll then go to specific IP asset examples, discuss how to create, document, and determine what type of IP to file. And then we will discuss strategies for acquiring and licensing IP, in and out, in licensing, out licensing. Our industry panelists will provide some examples of IP investments and acquisitions. And also we will try to provide you with some forward-looking, you know, industry and legal trends for digital health IP. It seems like my, here we go. So we're going to first talk about, we heard from the panelists, and so maybe you can briefly go over the businesses that you represent. So Sanuwave, if you can just give a quick summary of your business.
Sure. Great, thank you. We're an emerging leader in using energy to help the body heal itself. The body's probably the greatest invention in the world, right, because it can heal itself. What we do is we help it with leveraging energy platforms, mainly shockwave and ultrasound, to help the body heal itself. We've collected over 100 patents worldwide, and recently we acquired a complementary technology called UltraMist, which uses ultrasound. So we're now bringing a portfolio together of all the energy products that can help the body heal itself under one roof. Thank you.
And this is Todd. Regarding Merge, you know, we're a cloud-based software as a service business model, selling directly into cardiology practices, with a focus really on electrophysiology for what are CIEDs, these cardiac implantable electronic devices such as pacemakers, defibrillators, and implantable loop recorders. So we aggregate the data from a variety of manufacturers, many of which you would know, such as Medtronic, Abbott, Boston Scientific, as well as Biotronic that manufacture these devices. And we integrate with their servers and essentially aggregate information from the implantable cardiac devices to enable care providers, again, cardiologists and electrophysiologists, a better, what we would call frictionless digital workflow, care productivities, as well as a clinical empowerment, meaning giving the clinic the ability to choose the care pathways in which they desire to manage these patients with implantable cardiac devices. So we've been around since 2015, and we are rapidly growing in our market and continue to add to our portfolio of IP with the help of Bolsonaro.
Thank you, Todd. Now let's turn to categories of digital health IP. And I'm going to turn to my colleague, Eric Hansen, to provide us with an overview of what is digital health and the types of intellectual property that can be protected.
Thanks, Jean. And so I think as a starting point, it's helpful to understand what do we mean by digital health. We probably encounter the term digital health in the news, in various articles, and depending on the context, it can have a lot of different definitions. We here at Pulsinelli have generally defined it as products, services, and organizations applying technology and data to healthcare. And so the digital health intellectual property refers to that intangible property that's created and used in that digital health space. And there are generally four categories of intellectual property when we talk about digital health IP. The first and probably the most familiar to everyone is inventions, and that is the patent category. And you'll often see devices or software products that say patented, patent number, or patent pending. And there are two types of patents. There's the utility patent that protects an invention, which is a process or a device or the functions and structures of a particular apparatus. And then there are design patents, which protect the ornamental appearance of products or protect graphical user interfaces when we talk about software design patents. But in addition to inventions, there are also trademarks. You'll see those with TM or Circle R, and those protect the branding of a service or technology or a particular product. Copyrights, that's Circle C, and that protects text, graphics, visual images. So that would include software code, screens and graphics, platforms, reports. And then finally, the catch-all category, which you don't have to apply for registration, are trade secrets, and that protects confidential and proprietary information and data. On the utility patent side, you can see on our next slide that there are lots of different potential categories within digital health IP where patent protection may be available. And for purposes of our guest panel members, I would just highlight, for instance, artificial intelligence, system-level platforms and cloud computing, electronic health and medical records, health and medical software applications, and automated medical treatment devices and sensors as some of the areas where they have particular patent protection.
So let me just, I guess, Eric, to ask a question about digital health IP, is it still patentable? I mean, you talked about software, and I know merges technology is a SaaS technology. So in the aftermath of Alice, I thought that software was no longer patentable. Can you explain that?
In recent years, there's been a trend where the courts have said abstract ideas or things that you might be able to do in your mind or on paper without, even if a computer can do it, but if you could do it separate from the computer, that just because computer processing or data processing makes things faster or allows you to aggregate things, since you could do that those types of activities without a computer, they would just take longer. The courts were really against patentability following the Alice decision. However, we're seeing a shift back to more patent protection being available if you can tie the process, the software process, the data processing to a particular device or a technological improvement. If you are doing processing and that changes a display or an interface, or it changes the way a medical device might work. You know, for example, with SANUWAVE, their devices use lots of calculations and energy calculations for what, you know, the treatment and how much energy is going to be supplied to the body. They couldn't patent the calculation of the energy. That's like a known algorithm of how to compute that, but they could patent using those calculations to modify how the machine works in response to, for instance, you know, personal pain reactions or how much healing has occurred and how they would adjust that machine, you know, to further treatments. So when you apply the particular process to a particular technology, that's really how we're able to patent, even in view of some of the Alice problems that we were encountering before. And then I'm going to turn over the summary of digital or of design patents to Taryn, who heads up our design patent practice.
Thanks, Eric. So there's many benefits to design patents, particularly in the digital health space. Digital health often places an emphasis on the user experience and appeal. So as one example, one of the advantages of MERGES technology is the presentation of complex information in an efficient workflow for practitioner review, where the layout and appearance of the interface enhances the user experience. Another example, creation of wearables, packaging, medical devices, all of that often involves design choices to create products that appeal to end users. In some cases, these aspects of the technology are more important to maintaining a competitive advantage than the functionality. As Eric mentioned earlier, design patents cover the look and feel of an article. So design patents may be used to protect the visual appearance of a product or device, graphical user interfaces, the visual impression of movement, and more. Design patents are valuable as standalone protection mechanisms, especially in instances where obtaining a utility patent may be difficult. But they also complement other IP protection mechanisms to provide comprehensive protection. For example, MERGE has utility patent strategy for the functionality of its platform, and then they also have design patent strategy for their user experience. Design patents are an easy value add for any portfolio, particularly in view of the fact that they have a relatively lower cost, faster allowance, and higher potential damages for infringement. The chart on this screen is one of many that illustrates that there is a growing appreciation for design patents. So design copyright protection is different from design patent protection, where copyrights cover original works of authorship that are fixed in any tangible medium of expression, as Eric mentioned earlier. Unlike patents, protection exists from the moment of creation. But there's advantages to filing for protection for copyrights, including the ability to enforce in court. Copyrights and patents have different terms, infringement standards, and scopes. For example, copyrights do not provide protection against independent development by a third party, where patents do. So copyrights are an extremely cheap protection mechanism to obtain, and they provide robust protection against direct copying, so they're another easy value add to a portfolio. As an example, MERGE has copyrights in various aspects of its technology, including source code and for graphical elements.
Thank you, and I assume that the copyright protection can be obtained much faster, obviously, than the design patent or the utility patent.
Yes, the copyrights are pretty straightforward to obtain, and it moves very quickly.
Oh, right. So, and you're also going to maybe give us an overview of trademark protection and what does that mean, and what's the process for that?
Sure. So trademark applications are somewhat deceptive, where they look like they're just a simple form, and so many make the mistake of applying for them themselves. But there's a lot of strategy involved with it, and working with an attorney specializing in trademarks from the beginning will result in a stronger protection and also overall less expense where you don't have to pay to go back and fix things. In general, best practices include conducting a clearance search prior to adopting a mark and proceeding with an application based on those results. Additionally, you want to understand how the mark will ultimately be used in connection with brand development and marketing, because that will help inform an overall IP strategy. So Todd, how has the importance of branding been used to distinguish your product from other companies?
Yeah. Well, when we think about the trademarks and the things that we've done with Merge, we try to apply like this reinforcement of our value proposition. When I started the company, you know, my experience from Apple and the things that say Jonathan Ives with the design that they imposed was simplicity. And one of the value props that we have is clinical workflow and efficiencies. And so we were able to trademark two-click clear. And when we originally built the platform, I challenged our engineers. It's like, hey, look, if you can, you know, play music on your iPod in three clicks at the time, why can't you generate a pacemaker report as efficiently? What we see in the market is it takes care providers roughly 20 minutes and 188 clicks into their EHRs. And our goal was, can I access and do things within two clicks? And so it became sort of this trademark for us and also a core of how people function within our platform, that you're accessing data, historical data, relevant clinical data within two clicks on any patient. So it's been a key piece for our strategy. I think it's been well marketed as well for us.
Thank you, Todd, for that. And Kevin, perhaps you can share some of Sanuwave's experience with respect to the value of branding. So, you know, maybe you can tell us about your energy first.
Absolutely. It's a great example of developing a strategy with the Paul Cinelli and Eric, where we really think about where we're going as a business and how we're trying to position ourselves. And one of the things that we differentiate ourselves in the wound market is that we're one of the few companies that actually has energy, and it's a way of getting the wound prepped in a better way for closure. So they walked us through the whole process around, okay, how do we trademark energy first? And now it is our tagline. So even though on this slide you see healing today, curing tomorrow, all the conferences, all the marketing that we're doing now has energy first. And there was a process behind it that Eric walked us through and helped us on, okay, make sure we've done the right searches, make sure there's no one else there. And now it's a key part of how we're driving our business moving forward. And it plays extremely well into what's happening with reimbursement in the wound care space coming in January of 22, where they're moving more towards a value-based proposition versus volume-based within wound care. So the value of having the energy devices used first will increase exponentially over the next 15 months. And we're trying to get ahead of that curve. And we think that a tremendous amount of value was in this initiative on the trademarking.
Great. Now, we just talked about patents and trademarks and copyright, so there's another category of IP protection. So, Eric, can you tell us about that?
Yes, thanks, Jean. So the last category is the category that I mentioned, that you do not have to apply for any sort of registration like you do for trademarks and copyrights and patents, and that's trade secrets. And trade secrets is kind of everything else that has value that you use reasonable measures to keep secret. And so those can be your research and development, your testing, your strategies for your company, the plans going forward, customer lists, and any kind of black box functionality that you might not have described in any sorts of publications. So it's everything that is confidential and you're using things like non-disclosure agreements, confidentiality provisions in your employment agreements. You're controlling access to your facilities with a sign-in sheet, badges, and only allowing persons access to information that they need to know. The other thing that's unique about trade secrets is they last for as long as you're exercising those security and confidentiality processes. So they don't expire, and as long as you continue to treat them as secret and have contractual provisions and physical control provisions around keeping your trade secrets secret, they'll continue to be trade secrets. In addition to the employment agreements with confidentiality, while employees are at a company, often you will also include provisions that keep trade secrets from being shared with potential competitors or new employers that person might go to later. So that's another tool for protecting your trade secrets. And this is an area for SANUWAVE that often comes up on a daily basis in working with Yulian as they are out working with different educational institutions to test products, working with business partners, hiring contractors. They have quite a bit of trade secrets that they've got to maintain protection for. And so, Yulian, if you could touch on kind of the major trade secrets just generally that SANUWAVE has and what you do to protect them, that would be great.
Yes, thank you, Eric. In our opinion at SANUWAVE, the trade secrets are crucial for protecting the company, products, market segments, our customers, and ultimately the patient. At SANUWAVE, we have three major trade secrets. Two are related to the manufacturing process, specifically to the chemical composition of a solution used inside our shockwave applicators to provide them with extended life. And the second one is related to the proprietary software we use to program applicators. On the top of these two, we have one trade secret related to the authentication process that takes place in between the control consoles and different applicators, which is correlated to multiple passcodes specific for each type of product, encrypted passcodes that need to be exchanged in between console and applicators to allow them to function together. These trade secrets protect us against unlawful attempts by third parties to take part of our business, protect the integrity of the product that goes through rigorous processes during manufacturing and during field use, especially due to the fact that we are dealing with high voltages, components, and functions in our systems. And ultimately, we protect the safety of our customers and patients by providing for them a safe and reliable product. And these trade secrets, yes, they are protected all the time through the NDAs and in all our collaborations with different institutions, different universities, and collaborators.
Thank you, Yulian. I think this leads us to a discussion about some industry examples. And starting with, let me see if I can, I guess back to SANUWAVE to talk about some of your digital health IP patents. Is that Yulian, maybe, or Kevin?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry. Thank you very much, Jean-Marie. SANUWAVE core technology is based on specific type of shockwaves tuned for tissue reconstruction and regeneration. SANUWAVE's patent protection is for both medical and non-medical systems related to components, structure, and construction, and also for specific medical indications or non-medical applications. Our products are complex electromechanical systems that incorporate multiple software modules that interact with each other. Having proprietary software for both manufacturing process and the actual devices give us a lot of opportunities to think about the digital health and create the right protection for our products. On this slide, we have three examples from our patent portfolio. The first one is related to the customization of treatment based on condition of the targeted treatment area on patient's comorbidity. For example, they can be diabetic and have cardiovascular problems, et cetera. On the medication or other treatments that patient is having in the same time, and ultimately on the lifestyle, smoking, drinking. Based on these factors, the treatment can be adjusted and customized to fit the need of a certain patient and to assure ultimately the success. And that is done with the help of artificial intelligence to sort out different influences and provide the appropriate factors used to customize the treatment. The second example in the middle is related to the manufacturing proprietary software that I mentioned before in the trade secret section. Not only that we have a trade secret incorporated in it, but we are not giving the software to any distributor or remote manufacturing site for SANIAs located across the globe. For that, this patent teaches how such remote sites can access this proprietary software that resides only at SANIAs via a complex digital approach related to a licensing and financial algorithm that allows this remote sites to connect in a protected and safety way to our software during the refurbishment process of our reusable applicators. The third example relates to the identification of certain ancillary components or products that can be used in conjunction with our medical treatment. The software identifies if the ancillary component or product is appropriate for the treatment and if it can correctly work with our system. If the answer is yes, based on a two-way communication for identification, then the SANIAF system will allow the use of this ancillary component or product for the treatment. Secondly, by identifying these ancillary components and products, it helps us to properly track from financial point of view what was used during a treatment, which is very important for the reimbursement and payment purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Julian. Well, I'm going to move to Merge to give also an example of an area where they've obtained patent rights. And so back to you, Ty.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. I think Eric mentioned earlier in a couple of previous slides, you know, the aggregation of data maybe isn't as patentable or protective. But when you, I mean, we aggregated data within the first, you know, week of being a company, but the real magic became about around the design and the utility of the data. And so, you know, we've worked with Taryn to protect a lot of the thought process and UX or the user experience through our designs that are unique to Merge and give us a market edge to our competition. You know, we do our best to keep sort of a siloed view of the market. We don't try to get influenced by competitors. We come at things fresh. Our ideas are unique and pure in its intent. And I think that that gives ourselves credibility to bring a fresh perspective into the industry with a design that's really thoughtful and unique. And protect and be able to protect. The, you know, what we see across the healthcare organization or industry in general is that care providers struggle to connect the past with what's happening today. And so, again, through our design, we're able to make those things available within two clicks. So, as an example, if I'm an electrophysiologist looking at a patient that had VT, ventricular tachycardia, when they're seeing that arrhythmia, you know, the morphology of the EKG, these doctors can tell where it's originating from, what the onset of the arrhythmia is, how it was terminated. And as a care provider, when you're looking at this data, you want to know, is this new? Is this old? If it's old, how many times has it happened? And when? And is it the same or different than what I've seen in the past? And so, again, through our designs and usage of the data that we aggregated, we're able to answer these questions quickly and efficiently within two clicks and a glance versus a care provider who may spend probably 20 to 40 minutes, what we joke about is dumpster diving in an EHR where you're looking for that prior PDF that's just stuffed. So the user experience is really aligned with the things that we do, and it's critical for us to protect because we have such a unique perspective of how to address the market need that we're in.
Thank you, Todd. This really leads us to the next area of our discussion, which is how do you create and protect IP? And I'm going to start with Taryn. In working with Merge, and you know, what are some of the best practices that you have seen the company using to identify and protect IP rights?
Sure. So Merge does a very good job of keeping us in the loop with its technology development. And in doing so, we're able to proactively analyze the new aspects of their technology to determine the best protection mechanisms and file for the IP protection in alignment with the development. That ensures that they're getting rights quickly and that we can look to see, do we want to protect this with design patents, utility patents, trademarks, copyrights? How are we going to fit this into their overall portfolio? They also ensure that they're utilizing NDAs with third parties and that they're obtaining the appropriate assignments. This is especially important in comprehensive portfolios because rights manifest differently depending on the type of IP protection mechanism. So it's important to take the steps necessary to ensure that the company is the one that owns the rights. Merge also does a good job, as Todd was mentioning, of understanding the landscape in its industry, what gives it a competitive advantage, and understanding what other parties might be doing. Eric, do you have any best practices that you would want to add from working with Sanuwave?
So in Sanuwave experience, we've found that being aware of what your competitors are doing, doing searching, both patentability and clearance searching for new ideas is really important to avoiding potential infringement and for making sure that we get the most value out of patent protection. And so I know, for instance, Julian, when there's any type of new technology that they're working on or developing, he will scour the articles, both academic and industry articles, to see if similar activities have been taken before or what companies are doing. And that will help to potentially look up patents in that area by particular owners or people working in that space to see if there might already be some conflicting rights out there that you have to be aware of so you don't infringe someone else's rights if you were to come out with a particular process or device. And so I would just say that doing that searching is key, one, to protect yourself from infringing others, but also for identifying your opportunities for patents.
So we have a lot of ground to cover yet, but quickly I'm going to turn to Sanuwave to tell us, how do you decide when you file for patent protection and what countries to file it? In other words, what are your key considerations? And then if when you're after that, you know, maybe we can get Merge to also chime in and give us some of their strategies.
Yeah, Jean-Marie, we look first on the merit of the idea and how it addresses an unmet need of the society. Secondly, we assess how feasible it is to develop and implement this new idea for the company, for the Sanuwave, given existing internal resources or by tapping in external ones. We want to have a feasible product to protect and not just have an intellectual exercise. Thirdly, we look at the market segment that will be served by this new idea to understand, in the case we get to commercialization, how ultimately the financial bottom line for the company will improve. Selecting the country or region where we want protection, it is very important, and it is based on how strong the targeted market is represented into that country, which are the opportunities for our company to penetrate that market, and what IP climate is available in that respective country to properly protect our technology. Finally, as Eric mentioned, we look at the prior art to be sure that we can have our patent application approved and we can protect them.
So Todd, do you have anything to add to that? Anything maybe unique to your business?
Yeah, they're pretty similar, I think. When we think about what we're going to patent, again, having a fresh idea that addresses the market need, you kind of know internally, like, this is a great idea. We're coming at it unique perspective, and it's widely, you know, desired by our end user. We know we have something that's special, and we work with Terran to protect it. Regarding markets, our systems basically, CIEDs are implanted globally. However, the way that we are, our business model works is, physicians within the U.S., you provide care and Medicare reimburses you for that care. And so these devices are like annuities to cardiology practices. You check a pacemaker or a defibrillator quarterly, and you get paid quarterly. And these devices are implanted in patients for, gosh, anywhere between 5 to 10. It's a lifetime implant. So they're in there a long time. And so quarterly or monthly reimbursements to these care providers is what we look at as markets where it pays for the software, right? We provide value, they expedite care efficiently, and it becomes profitable, and there's a positive ROI to the care providers. So looking at different countries that have a reimbursement model for these devices is sort of the strategy we look at. So it's pretty simple in its form of how we target markets.
Thank you, Todd. I think, Terran, you might, based on what Todd just discussed, or maybe you can tell us about some common pitfalls unique to this space.
Sure, and Todd's point illustrated that well with, just going back to when Jean was talking about the digital health flower and how that illustrates the overlap of various legal areas in the digital health space. And there can be unfortunate consequences if an IP strategy is detached from those other legal considerations. Just as an example, on the regulatory side, it may dictate that certain types of data can't be stored, and then you make an easy mistake of having a claim element in your patent that stores data, particularly if an examiner is pushing to have that added to allow the claim, for example, in view of Alice. However, if you do that, now your patent has been stripped of its value because it's not going to cover any commercial embodiments in view of these regulations. So you want to make sure that your IP strategy is aligned with the various other legal considerations, particularly when you're early on and you're designing your product. You don't want to invest a lot of money into designing something that you're then going to have to redo based on how those other considerations come into play. Eric, are you seeing any similar issues that should be considered in terms of financing and acquisition in terms of alignment with IP?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I see is just in healthcare technologies in general, there's just so much more of like an interplay between all the different areas of IP that it's really just prudent to have a comprehensive strategy. Since, for instance, you can have a particular medical technology and it would be covered by all of the areas that we discussed of digital health IP. So it could be covered by trademark, by patent, there could be trade secrets involved, and then there could be software and copyright involved. So you have an interplay at all times with your IP of all the different areas of intellectual property. And so that creates a higher burden for instituting the best practices that we're touching on so that when there's a financing transaction or an acquisition, there's just more issues that are going to be looked at to see if you're taking all of the best practices into account across all of those areas for all of your medical technology. So I would say it's just much more pronounced in the healthcare space than maybe in other areas where there's just a particular type of device or product, and there might just be a few patents directed to that device. Instead, in digital health space, all the areas of IP are constantly coming into play.
Thank you, Eric. And it sort of leads us into the next topic, which is how to commercialize and monetize IP and the strategies that impact that. So going back to some, licensing, for example. So Sanuwave, perhaps maybe Kevin, maybe you want to talk about. Go ahead.
So one of the things we've done is that we have, again, a focus around energy products that are helping to treat wounds, along with other industries as well, but I'll focus on this for now. There are, we've developed the distribution capabilities with our sales team, the support needed for that, and there are companies that are smaller wound care companies that have IP that aren't going to be able to get to market. So what we've done is approach them on leveraging their license and their IP, and then we will jointly develop that product and then bring it to market. So we're leveraging our core technology and then surrounding it with in-licensing other technologies as well, and leveraging our sales team to distribute. And that's an example of how we've done the in-licensing from other companies. I think Julian could probably talk a little about what we've done with education, if that might be the next slide. But
well, we are approaching. We only have 15 minutes left and a lot more to cover. So perhaps we could hear from Merge of how some of the practices that you have engaged in with respect to the use of in-licensing versus out-licensing.
Yeah, we don't license any software per se internally. We are able to license our software to our users in the market. So, we own all of the technology we develop. There's essentially two ways to address our market, the market need. One is through a service business where you have staff that checks devices and you take part of the reimbursement from the care provider. The other is through technology like software that makes the care provider clinically efficient. Because of our focus on software development and maintaining high margins in our pricing and ability to scale and sell to the care providers, a lot of service companies are now leveraging our software to build their business around our software. And so, through Terran, we have to protect everything we build because, it's software. Somebody can easily go and try and copy it. So we take extra precaution in the contracts that we create to enable, whether it's a service company and or the care providers or hospital institutions, to leverage our software and provide services to managing CIED patients.
Right, to license your software, but at the same time, make sure you retain your ownership and preclude any kind of independent development based upon the use of the software.
That is correct. 100%.
Right. Let me just move on to the role of IP in investment and acquisitions in the interest of time. Mm-hmm. So, Eric, could you give us sort of some highlights on some of the work you've done with Sanuwave for with respect to the IP investments and acquisition?
Sure.
Digital health.
So we have recently, Sanuwave acquired a company called Cellularity for upwards of $20 million, and it was really an interesting opportunity for us to be involved with all the different aspects of IP from a financing standpoint, where Sanuwave's own IP was being looked at from the banks. And then we're looking at the potential assets that we're acquiring from an IP standpoint. And so you had all of these different moving pieces in both a investment financing sense, as well as from an acquisition standpoint. And so we touched before on the importance of best practices, and what we saw in that process was a lot of due diligence occurs to see how well you have implemented best practices for your own IP in a financing situation, because the banks want to be sure that you've got ownership of everything, that you're doing all the right things to maintain the value of your IP. And you're looking at the same things as an acquirer of a potential IP asset or portfolio of assets to be sure that those people have been doing the same, you know, the best practices to retain the value. So I would just say, like, if you're going through the investment process or financing process or an acquisition, be prepared that there's quite a bit of due diligence to look at how well you've conducted yourself in best practices. There are reps and warranties that you'll have to provide, and that others provide if you're acquiring them, that you've done all the right things from an IP standpoint, because everyone wants to make sure that the value that they're obtaining or that they're, you know, using as collateral has been maintained to a maximum standpoint. You can only do that through looking at the practices that the companies involved have taken with respect to their digital health IP. Kevin, could you touch just on your experience in the cellularity process that was very IP intensive, you know, from both a financing and acquisition standpoint?
Sure. So as part of the acquisition, a lot of it was financed with both equity investors and lenders. Specifically, Morgan Stanley was the key lender. And one of the things they wanted to attribute was a value to the IP. And again, from a lender's perspective, they're looking at, if things go wrong, what is the IP worth in some downside situation? And so that was a big part of their analysis, was to say, hey, even if things, you know, don't go as planned, at least there's value in the IP of the assets being acquired. Not just the assets we were acquiring, but the assets that were on the Sanuwave books. And it also had an impact in the fairness opinion, which was needed for shareholder approval. And then lastly, with from an accounting standpoint, you allocate a certain amount of the acquisition to IP value, so that there's from a balance sheet standpoint. So it has lots of what I would call deal specific, but at the end of the day, the most important is business related. And it's, do we have IP that's going to protect the business proposition that we're buying and purchasing? And if that's in place, then you can underwrite your go forward strategic plan with it. If that's not in place, then, you know, it's worthless, quite frankly, or the value of that asset is impaired dramatically. So it was a very big part of our acquisition.
Thank you, Kevin. So let's go on to our next, because we have only a few minutes left. So, I don't have a few minutes. Quick, transfer digital health IP. So Taryn and Eric and you know, maybe Todd, Kevin, you want to just give a quick soundbite on that?
Yeah, so this is Taryn. I'll start. We've seen IP filings in the digital health space trending towards remote care over the last several years, and this past year accelerated that even further. We're also seeing just an emphasis on user experience, where design patent filings are increasing. Additionally, just the value of IP. Todd, would you speak briefly just about the role that IP has played in your financing. It'll, you know, provide a good contrast to what Kevin was talking about in terms of from the perspective of the company.
Yeah, when we were raising our second round, the question of the patents came about from what our lead investor in our second round at Longitude Capital. We had patents pending at the time, and when we described that, it instantly created, as Kevin or Eric had mentioned, an increased level of diligence that we had to go through because we didn't have weren't issued a patent. I think we were able to defend our position pretty well through the work of you, Taryn. And we ended up receiving a patent down the road here, which has helped us immensely. Because then even early on into the market, when we were new, we were solving an issue with a unique perspective. We had the competitors that had existed started to sort of send us notification letters that we might be infringing upon their patents that are pending. we were in a very good position at that point going forward, again, with the help of Taryn and our ability to defend our position.
Thank you, Todd.
It's been incredibly helpful.
Thank you. Legal trends. Taryn, do you want to sort of give a quick recap on where you see, I mean, we heard about the swing back from the, from Alice, but Taryn,
sure.
I turn to you on giving a quick overview of that.
Sure. I'll talk on the legal side and probably have a couple of minutes to just talk on industry trends as well. But as you mentioned, Gene, after some uncertainty following Alice on whether software was eligible for patent protection, we're seeing the pendulum swing back in favor of that utility patent protection. We're also seeing companies pursue the utility patent protection from a variety of different angles in combining different aspects of the technology, as well as more companies are understanding the value of pursuing a comprehensive portfolio with complementary protection mechanisms that include design and utility patents, copyrights, trademarks, and trade secrets. We're also seeing some companies pay the price for not aligning their IP strategy with regulatory considerations. And then on the other side, the competitive advantage obtained by those companies that do. Finally, on the enforcement side, we're seeing more companies turn to IPRs rather than arguing patent validity before the courts. And so then just briefly touching on Todd and Kevin, what are you guys seeing in terms of just trends in the industry itself?
Go ahead, Kevin. I'll let you go first.
In the industry, I think one of the things that we're seeing in general are in the medical world is that you're having convergences of technology that are now, you used to have a device that just kind of stood on its own. And I think data is the big thing that's now the biggest trend is that you're being able to take diagnostics, use artificial intelligence to have a more customized and approach to treatments. That's I think the number one trend we're seeing in the wound care space. And again, wound care used to be the doc would kind of look at his thumb, say, oh yeah, that wound's it's a 2x3 centimeter square wound. I'll just slap a bandage on it and wish him luck. And what's happened is more and more data gets collected and more diagnostic tools exist. The ability to customize through a form of registries has been a big trend, and it's only growing, and that's really what's pushed the CMS, the people who pay Medicare and set the rates for Medicare, are pushing more so that there's less abuse in the system and more value is based on the data that they're getting out of that world. So you're seeing, that's probably the biggest trend we're seeing within the medical world is just the massive amounts of data are finally being tapped and leveraged on improving performance and quality of outcomes.
Todd, do you have anything you
want? Thank you for, sorry.
Yeah, I think the time's getting pretty tight. But in general, I think beyond the CIEDs in our market, the implantable devices, clinicians are embracing remote care and this thought of patient-generated data in what is RPM, remote patient monitoring, and wearables. I think is the proliferation of that information and the data flow is a trend and an exciting aspect of where we are headed.
And also protecting how you're collecting, right? How you're using, aggregating, creating algorithms and AI from all of that data. So, which by the way, I want to do, we have one of our upcoming webinars, I believe that's in November, which will talk about the data uses and data privacy. So I think that's in November, and Ashley can when she sums it up, can tell us about that. Thank you all for your time. Do we have any questions from the audience?
Nope, Gina, it doesn't Ashley? Look like we received any questions. Thank you all.
Okay.
And actually, our part three for the digital health series is on October 29th. If you guys have any questions on that, please email events@pulsinelli.com, and we can make sure you're registered for our part three series. Next up, and this concludes today's webinar, a recorded version of the presentation will be available on the Pulsinelli website within 24 hours. Thank you all for your participation.